Welcome to Encounters in the EAP Classroom, a podcast that reflects upon different experiences in the higher education English language classroom and provides thoughtful suggestions for both learners and instructors. I'm your host, Laura McNabb. It happened. It finally happened. So if you've been listening to my podcasts, you will know that I am super excited to report that some amazing discussions have happened between some students, and I watched it. It was fantastic. Hi, and thank you for joining me today. I'm so happy that you're here because I feel like I've made a major breakthrough, and I really wanted to share it with you. I've been focused a lot on engaging discussions and wanting the learners in my classrooms to figure this out because I think it's a huge part of having a successful university career, being able to engage in discussions, in classroom ideas, and also then to take that into your presentations, etc. You will know if you've listened to some of my other episodes, and if you haven't, I invite you to go listen to them, that I've worked a lot on various different strategies and various tactics. I came up with this new scheme of eggs, E for establish the topic, G for gather evidence, G for generate ideas, so that it can move into S, which is to share. And one of these sharing situations is the discussion. And I've worked around the basketball analogy of teams. And I've talked with my students about the spider web of how ideas are interconnected and we need to transition between each other's ideas. And other tactics where each student in the discussion has a role, or I give my students cards and it's like, this card says that in the next discussion you need to interrupt one time, or you need to disagree with somebody one time, or invite someone else to speak. All of these things in the efforts to get a discussion happening and a useful and learning discussion. And then it happened, and I'm so excited. So groups of students were in discussions, and they were learning, and they were passing ideas back and forth, and they were sharing. I thought to myself, is this because of what I've taught so far? Is this because of what we've been doing in the classroom? And I think, yes, to a large degree, it is part of that. It is part of preparation. The groups that were engaged in the discussions were prepared. They had gotten materials together. They had ideas generated, they had evidence to prove, and they had something to say, something to contribute. And I witnessed interaction and fluency where students were listening to each other and the passing back and forth of ideas, responding to each other, and essentially having something to say, having something that you want to say so that you say it and you actually say it better than you thought you could. And teamwork, as I said, passing ideas back and forth rather than debating and competing and just trying to prove that you know something, but rather looking for common ideas, looking for different perspectives, and trying to develop each other's knowledge. Although I saw these amazing groups, I also saw some of the same thing that I'm still working on, which is students arrived, they had done the preparation, but then they still sat together in a group and took turns speaking, listening and speaking. And it still didn't have that sense of wow, that sense of, oh, yes, now we're learning something together. So that, for me, is even more interesting because what I'm realizing is that some students are getting it, but some still aren't. So how can I, in my work with them, in the classroom time, in the learning activities, help or guide or facilitate or even instruct them a little bit more on how to find that space? And that space that I watched some of these students do, I would argue, was flow. And this might sound familiar to you because it actually was a book published back in 1990 by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. He was a professor of psychology at the University of Chicago at the time. And I remember seeing the book on the shelf when it came out. I remember I can still see the blue color that it was. And I've seen it on airport bookshop shelves since. And I've just kind of always thought, okay, next time I will read that. But a year ago, a student of mine in my EAP class recorded two podcast episodes discussing his review of this book, which he had read, Flow, that made a huge impact on him. And he popped to my mind when this idea of flow popped to my mind. So I contacted him. I reached out through email and he responded and I said, hey, I would love to have a conversation with you. And then when we met up, I asked him, do you mind if I record this? Because probably there's going to be some great stuff that we can share on my podcast. And he consented. So I had a discussion with Ao Shen and he was able to explain the idea of flow according to Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, and also explain how it has shown up for him in his own university study. So this is part of the conversation that we had. Welcome, Ao Shen.
Hello.
So tell us what introduced you or what caught your attention or why did you find flow?
For me, I think flow mostly happened when I am studying. For example, like I'm studying theories of economics and I'm doing the exams questions or the coursework, I'm actually applying the theories to solving the problems. So that's probably be the most cases for me to find the flow.
Okay, so let's back up a moment then. And can you explain what is flow?
Flow, actually flow by definition from the book, Flow, Optimal Experience by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. It is literally the state when you're actually concentrating yourself entirely to the things and at this moment, ignoring anything else. And I think that should be the state, so-called flow. Sometimes it doesn't happen and whenever I want it, but it does come to me sometimes when I'm studying.
Can you make it happen though? Or do you have to, it has to just happen accidentally?
I think it depends on the environment, of course, because the environment factors do matter sometimes. Mm-hmm. And also you have to obtain this kind of capability to get into flow. You have to know how.
So for you personally, what do you do to get into flow?
So as I have mentioned above, first of all, I will let myself be in an environment which is quiet and probably alone for me. And also I will just try to focus my attention to get immersed in the things I'm doing currently right now. I don't really force myself to calm down, but I'm trying to control my attention. And naturally, I get into this state sometimes.
Okay, so flow is about where your attention is, that it would be on a certain thing, whatever you're studying, and not on anything else. Is that correct?
Yes, you're focusing your attention. And at the same time, you're using an excuse to solve problems.
Now, you mentioned before when we were talking about how games can often be a place of flow for people. Can you explain again about how that happens?
Because I think game is a special category which is extremely suitable for flow. Because when the programs are designing a game, they are literally thinking about how should we make people intrigued about this game. So they were certainly designing some challenges for the gamers, and the gamers have to use their skills to solve these challenges. So to get some feedback instantly once they like throwing the fireballs and killing the goblins. So to get a sense of a fulfillment. So that's where they get deeper into it and get to flow.
So that sounds like with flow as well, and you mentioned this, that you need to have the skills to be able to achieve or solve the problems, yeah?
Yes, I think so. Because according to the book written by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, the skills are supposed to be compatible with the challenges, I mean the difficulty of this challenge. And so in this case, you can exercise your skill to a certain degree, to a certain extent, and you can get that sense of fulfillment. If your skill level is far below the purpose or the goal you're aimed at, you are absolutely going to be disappointed.
Now, what about if it's too easy? Maybe there's no flow there either. Yes, is that possible?
There's no flow either. Because if this scenario, if this challenge is a piece of cake for you, you'll be bored at it.
So it's that level that's just enough that it's hard, but you can do it, so you stay engaged, and then that is interesting to you.
Yeah, that is interesting to me. It should be hard, but it's also acceptable to you. So it perfectly fits your skill level. Along this process, you're growing your skill at the same time, and you really enjoy this kind of process. So you're into this flow. You perfectly enjoy it.
Yes, which is often why they talk about sports people being in flow, right? Because they love the game.
Yeah. If you're interviewing most of the top athletes, they'll say, and the motivation for playing is simply love for the game. Yeah, you have to be interested about it. Then you have this kind of intention to dedicate to it.
But you find flow in your studies.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think that means that you like what you're studying, or...
I would say it's painful sometimes, but I do have some affection for my major.
Yeah.
And I think getting into flow for me, in most cases should be, I am applying the theories to solve the problems, and I'm enjoying this process because I'm increasing my capability during this process, and it has instant feedback as well. So that should be the case.
That's interesting that you say it's painful. So flow doesn't automatically mean that it feels good.
Yeah, I think most people don't really, really like study, right?
Right.
So it is painful sometimes. If it's easy, if it's relaxing, it's not the flow. So I think flow, one of the key elements of flow is that you have to apply your skills to something. You're using your skills to solve problems. And this scenario often happens in work instead of relaxing.
Okay. And it also sounds like that it's not, like, flow is not mindless.
Yeah, it's not
flow
mindless.
Is very mind-engaged.
And you have clear perception of what you are doing right now. I've heard about theory about N plus one. So I think the difficult level should be like that. It's difficult, but it's not that difficult. You can solve it, but you can feel a little bit difficult at the same time. So that should be the perfect difficulty level for you to do.
So it's funny because they talk about this a lot for language acquisition, that acquiring a new language at that plus one level is ideal.
Yeah.
Because it challenges you, but it's not so hard that it's way above your abilities. So question, did you ever experience flow studying English?
I think so. Well, it depends. I think there are so many activities which can be called learning English.
Right.
Yeah, for example, like I'm watching a movie and I think the plots are really interesting, are really engaging. And so I naturally have a grasp of those beautiful expressions of it and the grammar use of it. I naturally get it. So that's kind of flow experience. That can be called flow experience, I think.
Yeah, your mind is engaged, you're thinking, you're focused on the language as you're watching and...
Yeah, I clearly know that I do that for learning. So that is a learning process. I'm applying the knowledge I have already obtained. And during this process, I am trying to get some new knowledge based on the previous knowledge base of English.
When you come out of flow or flow ends, mm-hmm. like, is it generally a happy feeling that you have or a disappointed? How does flow end for you?
Oh, I think it depends on how the flow is ended. And if I have reached a point where I feel like my skill level can never fit the difficulty level, I'll get disappointed and live in this kind of zone. But if I just naturally finished a whole series of challenges, I might feel peaceful after the flow experience. It's just an end. It's just a finishing point. And yeah, because you have finished a lot of things, you have sense of achievement. You have done so many difficult challenges. So that makes sense to me.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Aoshan, for joining me today and sharing your experiences and your knowledge of this topic.
Yeah, thank you, Laura.
After my conversation with Aoshan, which, as you've heard, was really interesting and very helpful to me, I did finally go and get the book. Then, as I was reading through the book, I came across Csikszentmihalyi's 8 Factors of Flow, which, as I reflected, connect back to the comments made by Aoshan. And right now, what I want to do is go through these 8 factors, looking at a discussion and maybe how that factor is happening or perhaps not happening. And that is probably a place to look at more classroom instruction or guidance or facilitation. So factor number 1, it is a task that you have a chance of completing. And this is a big part. The students that I work with presently are first year, so a lot of things are new for them. And being able to engage in a discussion about an academic topic is new. So there's a lot of process done, which is where eggs came from, in helping them to feel like they can do it, and providing them with materials to read, ideas to consider, so that when they come to the discussion, they have something to say. So I think that that is happening. The second factor mentioned is that you can concentrate on what you are doing. Very often in discussions then, and this is what was just happening recently, is put everything to the side. We are just talking. Close your books, close your phones, close your devices, and just be here with a few short notes. There are no other noises. Even then, having classes where it was one group at a time, or maybe two groups, so that there's even less distraction from the other students, and the focus here is to be in the space of discussion. Factor number three is that the task has clear goals. This might be a space that is perhaps still confusing, because for the students that were in flow, the goal was clearly to learn. Whereas the students that were not, I think the goal was just get through these minutes and talk back and forth, because that's what Laura wants us to do. Csikszentmihalyi mentions that flow is psychic engagement, that it is thinking, that your mind is part of the process, and that you are learning. So I think that when you're just trying to kind of tread water and survive 12 minutes, it's not really developing your mind the same way as, wow, I've got a chance to talk with these people and find out what they think, find out what they understood from what we read. Those are two very different types of discussions. Factor number 4, the task provides immediate feedback. I do think that this is a fantastic part of a discussion, because essentially we've got this kind of closed loop communication process happening, where there's a set number of senders and a set number of receivers. Ideas are going back and forth, decoding, encoding, feedback. So it's not like they need to worry about outside factors that can be distracting. And also, a discussion is in real time, like spontaneous, happening right now. Now, the next factor is that you have a sense of control over your actions, which I also think is part of the discussion that is there, in that students are not set told, you know, you have to talk at this time, or you need to be ready to talk now. Yes, I have my students invite someone to speak, but they've always got the choice. They've always got the choice to say, no, I'm not going to speak right now, or thinking to themselves, like, should I talk now? Should I say something now? So they have control over their actions that way. Two of the factors I actually think kind of connect to each other, which is that time and the outside world disappear. Time becomes like it's altered what the sense of time is, and everything else in the outside world fades away. So as I mentioned, the devices, the technology is put to the side. Students just have a few notes. They don't even have their textbooks, and it is just this discussion. So the potential is there. Now, whether or not it happens, I think is questionable. I know that the students that went into flow, when I said, okay, you can stop, they almost look up like they hadn't seen me. They didn't even know. It was like, oh, here I am, you know, resurfacing. Whereas the students for whom they were not in flow, there was a definite sense of relief. It's like, oh, finally, it's over. Time was going so slowly. But it wasn't going slowly because of flow. It was going slowly because of, oh my gosh, this was not fun, or this was not enjoyable. This was not pleasurable. I just had to get through it. And then the eighth factor, which I think is a really big factor as well. Now, none of these factors are more important than others, from what I understand. It's simply that when flow happens, basically all eight of these factors are present. And the eighth factor is that concern for the self disappears. You are no longer self-conscious. You're no longer in competition in a sense of me against you, but rather, like, I might be in competition simply to see, can I push you to push me, to push you, you know, back and forth, so that we push ourselves into an area that we didn't know we could go. But there's not a hierarchical sense of one of us is the leader taking care of the rest of us. There's no obligation. It's just this sense that I've entered in. And we know from watching dancers or watching sports teams or watching, you know, anyone or group of people rather, that when they're all together as one, not separate individuals simply side by side, but together as one, that there's this flow, this magic. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you win the game or that you put on the most amazing show of your life. It just means that regardless, you were in flow, that something was developing. There was psychic interaction of the group. People were learning, people were pushing themselves, and it was its own kind of little space happening. And this is what I watched. This is what I watched with some of the groups. So as I think about now, going forward, what does this mean? What do I need to do next with learning activities, with the classroom time that I have, that I can help these students find these eight factors? And it's not necessarily that I can make them do it, right? They are at choice in the end, but to make sure that they understand what can happen here. And I do believe that they're starting to realize that ideas like the input hypothesis of Stephen Krashen with language acquisition, that you actually need to be in that almost plus one space, because that's where your mind is engaged. So rather than letting yourself sit back and have this kind of easy peasy conversation, push it to the edges. Make yourselves search for those words that you're almost not searching, but make yourself have that more difficult discussion, and that it's not going to be comfortable. This is one of the key things about flow, is that it's actually not necessarily pleasurable, is not necessarily comfortable, is not necessarily super familiar, but it is enjoyable because you can handle it and your mind is fully there and fully engaged. I celebrate that all of my students generally have come to recognize the need to prepare and that they know that they have to have something to talk about. But now I also celebrate that there's another space to go and look, and that is this space of interactive communication and socializing. And again, this is not something that's easy. You know, lots of companies will hire coaches to come in and coach the team because they don't have good communication, or they don't have good teamwork, or they don't have good conflict resolution. So it's not something that students, just because you're in an EAP class, is going to happen automatically. But to create the space to learn and to practice and to prepare for it. And what I am happy about as well is that the mediation is happening. And this has been a big push of mine, to bring in those other sources, to use references and citations, but now to recognize that also it's still not just talk and listen, speak and listen. It is interaction, social interaction, humans interacting with humans, where we give and we take and we go back and forth, and we're actually happy to be there, and we're so happy that the others are there, and we're interested in what each other has to contribute to the discussion. So this is where I'm going in my classes, and these are the things that I'm going to work on, and I'll definitely let you know how that's going. But if you've been having some exciting moments in your classroom, either as the instructor or the learner, I would love to hear from you. Until then, thanks for being here today, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for joining today. Encounters in the EAP Classroom is written, hosted, and produced by Laura McNabb. You can learn more about Laura and her teaching at her website, www.windowsoflife.com. If you have teaching ideas or would like to collaborate with Laura, she would love to hear from you. See you next time!